There are three key dimensions that we see in this learning crisis. First, you see very low levels of learning in many schools and communities around the developing world. We find many children in third grade. We find, for example, in three East African countries, if you ask children to read a simple sentence like "the name of the dog is puppy," three quarters of the students who are assessed aren't able to read that sentence. In rural India, if we ask students to solve a simple two-digit subtraction problem, we find that in grade three, three-quarters of them cannot do that. Even as late as grade five, half of them cannot do that. A second dimension of this is very high inequality in these low learning outcomes. And so it's the children from the poorest families who are suffering the most from this learning crisis. The final dimension is really that there's very slow improvement, that when we track over time, either at the level of the individual child, we see often children stay years in school without making progress, or at the level of the system.
Dion, just let me ask you, why do you think children are being let down or failed, if you like, in this way? And crucially, can it be fixed?
It can absolutely be fixed. In the World Development Report, we argue that there are two main sets of causes for these low levels of learning. One are the immediate causes that happen at the level of the school. Students come to school unprepared to learn or without the strong foundations they need. Second, lack of motivated and skilled teachers and prepared teachers. But importantly, in the World Development Report, we argue that there are deeper causes, both technical in nature of working at a system level, getting all the pieces of the system to work together, but more importantly, political in nature. Actually, prioritizing learning is a political challenge, and getting everybody aligned behind learning is really the key challenge that this report is about. In terms of can this be done, can this be changed, well, we point to a number of situations where it has been changed. So, for example, Korea, recovering from the war there through the 60s and 70s, really prioritized learning in what they called, or what's been dubbed, progressive universalism, where basically they expanded access to education, to schooling, but at a very high quality.
Halsey, I mean, can more money fix it? Is it as simple as that, ultimately?
More money is sometimes part of the solution. It's quite clear that in some places more money will be needed. We have more and more children in school, and that's been a great victory for the global community, for these countries over the past 15 or 20 years, is getting so many children in school. We have to continue that progress because there are many children still out of school, and we want them to stay in school longer in many cases, and so that requires money. But what we focus the report on is really how to make sure that money is used well to achieve learning for all, learning for all children and youth. That means focusing a lot more attention on learning outcomes than has been focused on them in the past. And that can mean, for example, focusing more attention on when we do spend money, making sure that it reaches the communities and the students who need it the most.
What's the single most important improvement that a rural school, say, in a low-income country can make to just try and turn this round?
You can act at the school level, but really we argue you have to assess learning at a system level so you really know where you are and where you're going. What we argue is you want to act on evidence, and the evidence really points to three things, three key areas to intervene. One is preparing children for school so they're prepared to learn. Two is working with teachers to ensure that teachers are prepared and motivated. We have some statistics in the report that show that on the day of a random school visit and a surprise school visit across seven sub-Saharan African countries, teachers were absent about 20% of the time. And then, as Halsey mentioned, getting the management and the governance at the school level really lined up behind teaching and learning.
The tragedy of impaired learning due to stunting in early childhood development, is it after just a few months, the damage is done, obviously, before they even get to school? So, I mean, what kind of solutions can be found for this awful problem?
Thanks for asking about that. I think that is one of the exciting things and also disheartening in this report, is that we're able to point to new evidence from brain scans that shows what deprivation and stunting can do to the brain of a child who grows up in poverty, and how you have less dense neural connections quite early in life. And we can see this in brain scans, and that's part of the reason that they tend to fall behind when they finally get to school. We also have evidence of widening gaps in what children know, even in the years before schooling, once you start measuring that. So clearly you have to tackle this. I mean, the ways to turn this around, I mean, there is some damage done early on, but that doesn't prevent you from being able to remediate it and from being able to help that child really develop. So if the nutrition that comes later is certainly better than none at all. When children aren't able to read, for example, by about grade 3, then they tend to fall further behind throughout the rest of their schooling. So we really need targeted, focused early intervention in kindergarten, first, second grades when these children first arrive at school, so that we can identify those who are starting out well behind, make sure that they get teaching taught to their level. And one of our big themes under the teaching section of the report is that it's important to teach to the level of the student, not at the level that the curriculum says you should be at, but gauging, assessing what each student is able to do, and then helping him or her at the appropriate level.